Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filthy Lip Out Golf Podcast with me, Kit Alexander, and John E. Morgan. And joining us today is a man who's played cricket for England and now is a scratch golfer. It's an incredible story. James Taylor, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on. First of all, how are you? What have you been up to?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I mean, you guys, I followed you a lot with the EuroPro because I'm a proper golf geek. So I watch a lot of golf. So I know before you guys got in contact with me, I followed you quite a bit. Actually, Kit, I haven't told you this, but I was in an airport. I don't know whether it was in Portugal or back in the UK. We were on our way back or to Portugal and you were in the airport at the same time. So I stalked you before you've stalked me, put it like that. But anyway, thanks for having me on.
Oh, you should have said hello. I would have loved that. That would have been amazing.
I was too starstruck.
No. Yeah.
Love it.
Oh, that's hilarious. That is hilarious. Obviously, you're a good golfer now, but you were a very, very good international cricketer. Just tell people a bit of the backstory if they aren't familiar with it, because you had to give up the game and retire at the age of just 26. So tell us a bit about what you achieved in cricket and why you had to retire early.
Yeah, I will do it as brief as I possibly can, because for most people, cricket is probably pretty dull. It was a living for me. I mean, I strived my whole life to be a professional sportsman. I was actually best at football and rugby growing up. I'm from a horsey background. My mum and my dad was a jockey, professional jockey. My mum was an eventer, horse rider. My sister was. All my cousins have rode for Great Britain, as well as my sister during the age group stuff. So I rode all my life, and then I kind of got bored of that, sitting on a horse. I wanted to kick or throw or hit a ball of some sort. So I played football, rugby growing up, got into cricket. I kind of went furthest in cricket growing up. And then it was kind of a natural progression. I didn't want to sit in an office. I wanted to kick or throw a ball. I went down the path of cricket and signed my first professional contract at age 17. I played for Leicestershire originally, then moved to Nottinghamshire, just down the road where I live now, at Trent Bridge. And then I played for England first when I was 20 in ODI cricket. Then I moved to Test cricket when I was 21. And then, cut a long story short, I strived so hard to get to the top. I just reached the pinnacle. I'd cemented my spot in both the Test side and the ODI side. And then it hit me. Yeah, I had these... I thought it was just a bit of anxiety. First game of the season in Cambridge. I'd just come off a Test tour in South Africa. And then I'd had 2 weeks off, which was the longest period of time I've ever had off in my career. And so it was like 8, 9, 10 years of career, and I'd never had 2 weeks off. Yeah. I loved training. I loved hitting balls. And then I took some time off. Then first game of the season, cut a long story short, I had pains in my chest. I thought I was going to die at 10:30 a.m. I got put on oxygen. I tried to be sick. I wanted to... What was going on inside my body where was my heart was going mental. I could physically see my shirt beating out of my chest. And that was when I thought... The only time, actually, I thought I was going to die was at 10:30 a.m., and I just wanted it to stop what was going on inside my body. Cut a long story short, I went to hospital 6 hours later. And what happened in that 6 hours, I mean, shouldn't have happened because I should have gone to hospital straight away. But I went into hospital, got hooked up to the machine, and my heart rate was at 265 beats per minute. And it had been doing that, not only 265 beats per minute, but it was out of rhythm. And if you're meant to not be able to withstand that for more than 10 minutes, and somehow everything was aligned, and maybe my fitness. So that, I think, saved my life. But I got hooked up to the machine, and the machines were going mental. The doctor said my heart rate was going at 265 beats per minute. They said I'd done the equivalent of 6 to 7 marathons on the bounce. That's what my body and my heart was doing. So then I was in hospital for 3 weeks. I couldn't walk for a week because of what my body had gone through. It shut down. That 3 weeks in hospital was the hardest time of my life. I just reached the pinnacle of the sport, playing international sport. I've been doing that for however long. I've been traveling the world, making a good living, doing what I strive so hard to do. And so many people had helped me along the journey. And then that was all, the carpet was whipped from underneath my feet when I'd reached a pinnacle. So that was incredibly hard to take. But I mean, I wasn't meant to survive what I did survive. I wasn't meant to. It was like, if anybody knows football and follows football, it was the same thing that Fabrice Muamba had.
Yeah.
So that's the easiest way to describe it, because nobody knows who James Taylor is, but everybody knows who Fabrice Muamba is. So yeah, I should have died. 80% of people that have the condition that I have and it presents die. And that's found in post-mortem, usually. So wow. I was very lucky. So that's my brief story.
I mean, it's incredible to have got to the point you did. Like you say, you just cemented yourself in the England ODI and especially the test team at that stage. You just got yourself right in there. John, you had some physical and illness, ailment stuff that affected your career as well. How frustrating is it? And I'll ask you both this as well, because for lots of people like me, we dream of being professional sportsmen, professional sports people. You guys have had that, lived it, and an ailment has taken that away from you, essentially. John, you had a kind of similar experience. What was that like for you with your epilepsy and the other things? And how did you deal with having that professional life kind of taken away from you?
Well, I think the invincibility factor, you know, you feel invincible. You don't think you can be touched. You're on cloud nine constantly, and you don't think anything's ever going to get in your way. You're just on a massive, you know, rocket ship heading to the moon, and you ain't stopping. You're loving life. But yeah, when it hits you hard, and you got to reassess. It's the first time you feel like, you know, you got to look after yourself, and that's quite worrying, you know, especially at a young age like yourself. You know, you know, we're young, we were pups. I mean, I was about the same age, 26, when I had my attack. And, you know, all of a sudden it's like, where did that come from? And what's that all about? And it was all stress related for me, you know, and I thought, I'm a pretty laid back guy, you know, I thought, you know, nothing really bothers me. I get pumped up, definitely get pumped up because I'm a sportsman, but I was a bit bemused by it all. But, you know, you can't help but what goes on in your brain, you know, that's a different element. But, you know, there's ways around it. You know, you find out who your friends are, and you find out, you know, a lot of things. And you know where to lean to, and you know there's always other angles, isn't there? There's always other angles to play at. So I mean, your dream is not, you know, you've lived your dream for a bit, you've been lucky to do it, you're awesome at doing it, but unfortunately it's not going to last forever, and you just got to get on with it and then find a different road. It's just the way it is, isn't it? Unfortunately,
I think that's spot on. I think those are the one thing that hit me was when, you know what you like, as a professional sportsman, you've been able to do what you want. You're one of the best in your field. And you're the best in my cricket team or whatever. And you've strived, always been up there with the best in your field. And then when you've got that taken away from you and you're not invincible, because as a professional sportsman, you think you can walk. You can do what you want, can't you?
Yeah, you go 12 rounds with Mike Tyson and not worry about it.
And because you're in the mindset to be a professional sportsman, you have to be so confident in yourself and your ability. And you can do anything you want, not just in golf or in cricket. But then when that's taken away from you and you realize that you are vulnerable, that's incredibly hard. And on the side of that is your ego. It's a massive ego dent. You're no longer that professional sportsman that people point at walking down the street going, that's John, that's James walking down the street. He's a professional cricketer. He's a professional golfer. And that's a massive ego blow. And now you're not the best at what you do anymore. You've got to start from scratch. And it's really hard to take. And I can remember, so I was really ill for the year after. I'm still every day, I get it. But I was really ill. Like, I physically couldn't walk. Every time for the next 6 months, I had no circulation because my body was so screwed up from the instance that happened. I had so I was cold for the next 6 months because my circulation was screwed up. Every time I walked up a set of stairs, I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I got to the top of Twickenham. I can remember about 2 months after I got to the top of the Twickenham stairs in the stadium to watch England versus Wales. I love my rugby, and then really Wales got dominated, didn't they? I was on the way back, and in that stadium, I thought I was going to have another heart attack. On the way back, I hadn't really shown too much emotion for a few months. And then suddenly I just broke down because I realized, it was the first time I realized I wasn't invincible. I'd been this fit, this guy that could take off his top when he wanted and looked all right. But now I was none of that. I wasn't a professional sportsman. I wasn't invincible. My body that was so strong is now unbelievably weak. So yeah, it was just everything flipped on its head. And that was that ego then and the lack of invincibility was really hard to take.
So yeah, I'm with you on that one, James.
Yeah. So how did golf fit into the picture then? Because a lot of cricketers played golf when they played cricket as well. But as I understand it, you didn't play a lot while you were a cricketer. It was something that came after this all happened.
Yeah, so cricketers either love golf or hate golf. And I was like, I stand in a field long enough. I don't need to stand in the field again and hit a ball. So I didn't play golf. I didn't play any golf. That last trip to South Africa, Johan Rupert, we had spent a bit of time with Johan Rupert is racing, then obviously Leopard Creek. And he invited all the lads and flew them in his private jet to Leopard's Creek after the test match to Johannesburg.
Mate, how good is that place, by the way?
Well, here you go. I was like, everybody got invited and I was like, I'm not going to Leopard's Creek. I'm going to sit by the pool. I don't need to go and play on a golf course. I'm not going to embarrass myself on a golf course. So I sat by the pool, probably a little bit hungover from the wind before, and everybody else went to Leopard's Creek on this private jet. And I just sat by the pool with two other guys. Oh my God. And now I'm like, I watch it on the TV all the time. So I turned that one down.
Johan Rupert's listening to this. Johan, come on, man. Get the plane out. Give him a ride over, mate. He deserves it, man. He knows what he's missed. Come on, bud.
Yeah. So now I do. Yeah, foolish me. But I'll tell you this goal story. So basically, I was in hospital lying in bed and the doctor told me my life is over. I can't exercise. I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't drink alcohol. Everything he's telling me I can't do. Anything that raises my heart rate basically is a no-no. And he's like, oh, but you can play golf. And I'm like, golf? Not a chance am I playing golf. That's an old man sport. And I was like, because my dad played it and that was me being naive. That's what I thought as a stubborn little cricketer that doesn't want to spend any time in a field. I was like, no, I'm not playing golf. And then my missus was like, oh, give it a go. Just give it a go. So I lo and behold, I gave it a go. Got on the range and I was like, oh my God, how easy is this? This is so easy. And then I got on the course and I was like, oh my, I'm a professional sportsman. I shouldn't be dudding it to the right, dudding it to the left, a few yards in front of me. After being on the range, thinking this is easy because the mats, you're bouncing onto the ball and you can't miss hit it. But then I was so embarrassed for the first few months. I wouldn't play with anybody. I would only play on the same course. Typical proud sportsman, the most competitive man in the world. But it just grabbed me because the one thing I was missing after cricket was a release. I had no release. I couldn't drink. That was one release. Exercise was another release. And there's so many things I couldn't do, but golf was one thing I could, and I could challenge myself at another sport. The one thing with my condition, I can't be competitive because that generally means it's raising your heart rate. But golf, you're at a lower level. And yes, I can be competitive at it because my heart rate's that bit lower, apart from a 3-foot putt on the Saturday medal.
Is it to hit bucket or to come down a shot or to, what is it?
Say that again.
Is that to hit the buffer zone or is that to come down a shot that you get the weebie jeebies?
No, I love that. Like what adrenaline I can have. It's the only time I get in that mental space that I was in cricket. So that's why golf is so good for me. I love to learn as well. And it's a technical sport and it's a mental sport, just like cricket. So there are a lot of crossovers, even though the techniques are totally different. There are a lot of crossovers. And I love getting in that mental headspace in a medal on a Saturday when you're being competitive. And you play a rubbish shot, but you've got to bounce back and you've got to put that to one side. And there's a little bit of pressure on. I'm super competitive. And I love getting in that headspace where I can't in any other walks of life anymore. So it's brilliant. It's been really good for me.
That was what I was going to ask you, actually, Jane. I was going to ask you about the swing and cricket, how you interacted with like kind of like changing it all up because it's so, so different. I mean, I played cricket up until I was about 12, 13 years old at Portishead Lake Ground, I started doing the scoring as well. So I learned how to do the scoring on the book, which is unique little thing to do.
I remember that from back.
I can't even, if you put it in front of me now, I don't think I'd be able to do it anymore. But anyway, I got right into it, but then I love golf. And my dad actually said to me, I got to about 12, 13. And this is a question I was going to ask you as well. He said, which one do you like, John? I went, he said, cricket or golf for you? I went, I quite like golf, Dad, actually. I think I'm pretty good at golf. He said, you're pretty good at cricket as well. I went, yeah, I like golf. I think I got the bug for golf. And that was it. He said, well, just why don't you play a little bit more often? I went, yeah, all right. And that was it. I was off and running. But I found it really hard. I had this big, forward, my left arm would just come right away from my body hitting a golf shot. And I was like, I baseballed it for about a year and a half as well. So, I didn't have a conventional grip or anything like that. And I was just going to ask you, how did you cope with that?
It was just a case of learning. Like I initially had lessons because typical me being competitive, I wanted to be as good as I possibly could. And I know as soon as you get something ingrained, it's hard to get out of that pattern. Because this is the mindset I transferred my skills that I knew in cricket and about learning into golf. So I, typical me wanting to be as good as I possibly could be, I thought I'll get ahead of the game and get some lessons and just learn the basics. And in cricket, I wasn't a super technical person, but my technique, it was never pretty, but it was very efficient. I knew it better than most people knew their game, which gave me an edge. And in golf, again, I appreciate those that just get it done. It doesn't matter how, it's how many. And that's how I live by in cricket. So I'm learning all the time now. I'm 4.5 years in and I love playing because I love learning. Every opportunity to go out on the course and play and learn a new shot, find something new. It's brilliant. And with my coach, I didn't want to overcomplicate it early on because it will just fry my head, and I want to enjoy it because you can rip my technique apart at all stages, but just have a few basic fundamentals that you understand and get that bedded in, then move on to the next thing.
Nice.
Yeah, it is brilliant.
It is good, man. Once you get hooked, man, that is it. It's the bug you'll never forget. I remember coming out of school and just first thing I did was grab my BMX and off I went down 6 miles down the road to the golf course, get there, wait until my dad finished at the docks. He'd come whack me back, bike in the back of the car, back home. Every hour I could take or get, I would do it. It's what a sportsman's all about, isn't it? Once you're addicted, mate.
100%. And on that is exactly why lockdown. So before lockdown, it was like, you play golf all the time. And that's my exercise. The other thing I forget, it's my only exercise I get. I can go for a little pedal on a bike, but I'd prefer to be exercising, doing something that I enjoy. So golf is my exercise as well as my release and a technical challenge and stuff like that, and something to learn at. It's my exercise. So it gets me out there to not put on too much timber, basically. Not get, because I would be round if I didn't walk, because I eat that much rubbish. It's good for me just to get out there, walk 6, 7, 8 miles a day. Especially when you're chasing my balls everywhere, you walk a little bit further.
It's not easy to swing a golf club when you're a human balloon, I can tell you that.
It's like secret steps. I'm quite aware of how many steps and how far I walk each day.
Yeah.
And you can look back and you can see the days I've played golf and you do 6, 7, 8 miles, like you say, without even realizing it when,
100%.
You go, oh, I'll go out for a walk today. And you might do a couple of miles, but that, feels like, it's a good hour walk. You might do 2, 2.5 miles. Goal, get out there, 6, 7 miles. You haven't even thought about it. You're winning.
Yeah, it is.
What about 36 hole events then, James? Have you been playing club championships and your local kind of opens and stuff?
See, this is the thing. That's also why I reckon I could have got down to scratch a little bit quicker. One, if I didn't have a full-time job. But two, if I could play on the weekends. I rarely play on the weekends because of work. So when you get to category one, you can only come down in comps. That's why I struggled to come down at the back end, because once you're in category one, I was in category one, I reckon after two and a bit years. So it's hard to come down when you're not playing any comps.
Yeah.
So now this new handicap index is great, because I can play, when I can play on the week and I can do it properly, I can hand in some cards, so I can come down a little bit more. So hopefully that will help me come down a little bit more. So yeah, I did play a medal. I played a medal a couple of weeks ago, which was good. And it's just good to have that card in your hand to get that competitive edge again and have those, like, a few. Yeah, of course you're not really nervous, but you're not comfortable playing with your mates like you would, hacking it everywhere. It doesn't matter. There's no consequences. But I love it, that competitive edge. So playing in a medal is always really good as well.
And when you got down to scratch, you put on Twitter that you'd achieved this 4.5 year goal of getting to scratch. So literally 4.5 years ago, did you say, when you started sort of playing golf and taking it a little bit more seriously, right, I'm going to get down to scratch? Was it a very specific thing that you said you wanted to do?
Yeah, I just wanted to get as good as I can be. Like, that's the thing. I'm always striving to get better at what I'm doing. And like,
he wants to kick Brodie's and Anderson's asses. That's quite
100%. But that's a competitive nature, isn't it? Like, you want to beat who you're playing against, or you want to be as good as you can possibly be good. Now I'm no longer that good cricketer that people point at in the street. I need to kind of be as good as I can at something else. Yes. And yeah, I love it. It's brilliant. So I'm just striving to get as good as I can. I think I did set out that goal, see how quick I can get to scratch. Yeah. But when you've got full-time jobs, you're going here, there and everywhere, it's hard to practice and play. So it probably took me a little bit longer than it could have, but 4.5 years.
Years is an incredible effort to get down.
Take my hat off to that, mate. That's awesome. That is awesome.
Very people that ever pick up a golf club will never get anywhere near scratch. I mean, I'm a 7 handicapper and I've been playing since I was sort of 16 years old. So to even get there at all is incredible, let alone to do it in 4.5 years. It puts people like me to shame. What do you make of the individual side of golf? Because obviously everything you did was part of a team. You were part of a team at Leicestershire, at Notts, at England. And that's a wonderful thing about sports like cricket. You mentioned football and rugby as well. The team element is brilliant. What do you think about the fact that golf is an individual sport?
I would be lying if I said I didn't love it. The fact that it's an individual sport. The beauty about playing a team sport is that your mates can bail you out.
Yeah.
But
equally,
as a professional international sportsman, you have to be pretty selfish and single-minded. So we're used to it. A batsman especially, you're out there for the team, doing a job for the team, but also you're doing it for yourself and scoring as many runs for yourself as you can. It's kind of a double-edged sword. Of course, you are doing it for your team and the team comes first. But if you don't succeed as an individual, the team aren't going to succeed. Because if those 11 individuals don't succeed, the team's going to be nowhere. So there is a big element of you as an individual performing in the game of cricket. I enjoyed that. As a batsman, like I said, you have to be pretty. And obviously, you can't be too selfish, but you need an element of that single-mindedness to be able to compete at the highest level. And it's the same in golf. You have to train on your own, even more in golf. In cricket, obviously, you need somebody throwing your balls or feeding your balls in the bowling machine. Golf is to that next level, but cricket, you're doing a lot of that on your own. And the training in the gym that people don't see, all that stuff, going for the runs, you're doing it on your own. And you're making those little gains on your own all the time as a sportsman, whether it be cricket, football, rugby, golf. You're on your own doing a lot of the dirty work, which I loved. And I love doing it behind closed doors where people didn't see. Why I love it in golf. Like in lockdown, 2 days before lockdown, I got a simulator installed at home. I converted my garage. And that is, there he is. Yeah. He's got his simulator. Today, I've just got a new screen put in my simulator as well. I just love training. I love doing it on my own, learning something new, trying things out. And that's been a complete game changer. Like having I've got the equivalent of the quad. So the GC2 and the HMT unit at home, Foresight Sports. And look, because I'm so new to it, understanding what a feel looks like with the numbers on the data that's coming back, it's really helped me understand. And knowing what a toe strike does compared to a heel strike, and, you know, the angle of attack. These are things up until this last year, bearing in mind I'm at scratch, I did not know about. I didn't have a clue about. And this device at home has really helped me, like launch angles.
Oh, mate, you got like, so much to, well, meaning like you got so much to.
Yeah.
It's honestly so like a minefield. Literally, it's like a minefield, buddy. You know, you go for the load zipper, that's just like the Tiger Woods stinger, and then you go for the big old floater. You know, it's like, oh my God, the difference in the control of ball and everything like that and the way it's shaped.
And that's the thing. I need to control my, I mean, I could talk about this all day, so this is great with you two golfers. Like, exactly, controlling ball flight. So I played with Wade Ormsby the other day, 2 days ago.
Good boy, Wade.
What a man, lovely guy. And so I've played with quite a few professional golfers, but when you play with the top and with these boys that are real, real good, it is just a different ball game. And I love playing with him because, again, you're not just playing with your mate, you're playing with a guy that's at the top of the field, one of the guys at the top. And you get a little bit nervous. And I love being put under the pump just to seeing what my default is and what my my patterns are when they're really bad. And I was really bad. So I quite like just seeing and exposing yourself to see what you do and you revert back to when you're bad. But it was so good to watch a guy that, like I said, one of the guys that was at the top of the field play. Unbelievable player. Literally, he hit every fairway. We were playing right off the tips at Hollingwell. And I mean, you guys would expect that, but to see it being done and hit every green, he bounced through a couple, but obviously got up and down because his short game is ridiculous. Yeah. It was just so good to see.
I mean, that's the one thing, short game. Tell us about, what's your strengths and weaknesses? Come on, diss the dirt then, James. Come on, man.
So I get my power in cricket because I'm only a short guy. I got my power in cricket from my hips.
I
could hit sixes straight, but that wasn't my strength. I would hit sixes square, so I'd flip my and get the snap in my hips was where I got my power from, and my hand speed, because I was a little guy, I had to find a way to generate the power because it wasn't from levers or like big muscles. So in golf, I get short, I get really stiff, so I get short in my backswing and then I fire my hips, so the two just goes terribly together. So I'm blocking outright, whipping my hands out. But so that's my bad traits in my swing. But it's just it all needs a good tidy up. My putting, when my putting's on, it's a different game. Because again, like I said at the start, it doesn't matter how, it's how many. And I love the fact that I've played a dirty shot off the tee and I find a way to like make a birdie or a par. Especially as an amateur sometimes, you're better at the harder shots because there's no pressure. It's like those people that make excuses I hate. But when you've got an excuse in golf, it's so much easier because you're not expected to pull off that shot, so there's no pressure to pull it off.
I find focus as well great because you actually properly think about what you've got to do because it's such a difficult shot. You maybe engage your mind more than you would.
And you're not thinking about technique. You're just thinking about outcome. So you'll create that your technique depending on what you need to the end product to be. And that's when I'm best, like not thinking too technical. But equally, I quite like a technical thing to think about sometimes because then you're not thinking about the outcome. And it's like in cricket, everybody's just focus on the ball. And I'm like, I'll focus on my technique because then I'm not worried and I'm not putting pressure on the outcome. Mm-hmm. So like water on your right, everybody's going, don't hit it right. Don't hit it in the water. And I then strip it back and go, right, technically, what do I need to do? To stop that happening. So I'm not thinking outcome water. I'm thinking, right, let's get my swing, let's get the technical things right. And that will take care of itself. If you know what I mean.
There's that mental thing, isn't there? Where your brain doesn't hear don't or no. So if you say don't hit it in the water, your brain just hears water and you see it. And it's if that's your last thought before you're about to hit a shot, that's where your focus goes to the water. So invariably, your body kind of follows through on it. And
you're spot on. And I use a lot of techniques from cricket because cricket is such a mental sport. Golf is such a mental sport. So yeah. that's really helped me with my golf, especially when it comes to competing. Mm-hmm. And like knockouts, love it. Like match play. Like, how much better is that than a medal?
Oh, I love match play, just man. A bit.
And like, that's why it's so great. You hole a like dirty 30 footer and you've won the hole when they're like 6 foot away or something and they're expected to win it. It's great. But usually it happens the other way around to me.
What has enabled you to get so good at golf? Obviously, you've got fantastic hand-eye coordination. You are a natural sportsman and athlete. But what are the big leaps you've had or the tips along the way that have really helped you reach the level you've got to?
I think, obviously, the hand-eye coordination has given me a big head start. Hitting a ball for a living does help. But, I mean, it's amazing the difference between a stationary ball and a moving ball. And when you train yourself, it all becomes instinct. When you've got 0.4 of a second to pick up the ball, to decide where that ball is going to pitch, to decide how much it's going to bounce, to then get into a position and decide where you're going to hit it, and then in your head subconsciously you know where the fielder is and you're going to place it in the gap, you've got like 0.4 to 0.5 of a second, but that's all instinct. And it's crazy if you break it down like that to think that you could actually do that and make a living out of it and get it right.
golf is
completely different. It's all you. It's more of a closed sport than cricket. Yeah, you have the elements, the bounce of the ball, you have the weather and stuff, but it's a stationary ball and you're standing there, you've got to hit it. So that is so different. Like initially shadows and noises. When you're in the stadium full of 100,000 people, you don't hear anything. You don't hear any of that. But when you're sat trying to hit a stationary ball, you hear everything and you see shadows. And that took me a while to get used to. The hand-eye coordination obviously helps, but I think the ability to learn and pick up information quickly, and the best players in the world, whatever sport you are the quickest learners. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I transferred those skills in learning cricket into golf and picking up things. And ultimately, you're not going to be good if you don't practice. And I love working at something.
Yeah.
And I love one, learning, picking up. Just give me two things to work on. I'd say, just give me a thing to work on. I will go away in 2 weeks. I'll try and get that bedded in. Obviously, it doesn't happen that quickly, but give me something to work on and I'll go away and work on it. And ultimately, you're not going to be good at something if you don't practice it. You need the natural ability, but I love practicing and I love listening and I love learning. And I just try and put it all together and try and help me move forward. Or whatever skill that is, whether it's chipping, putting, driving. Because I'm still, I'm so new to it.
Yeah.
I'm learning all the time. Like there's things like I'm still learning. I'm like, how did I not know that? Like now. And that's what excites me most, because I'm plus 0.2 and I am a proper novice. Like I'm doing all right, but I'm bad compared to where I want to be.
I know there's a question I want to ask you. You know, you go through the levels, like, so in cricket you went through the levels, right? And all of a sudden your confidence just starts going up and you reach little peaks, don't you, as you go along, and then they become normal, these peaks, once you get there, and they're just normal, and then you just strive for another peak and you go. In golf, you've obviously started right down the bottom and you've got to scratch. Now there's a couple more to go, but what was it like getting from like 10 to like 5? And what was the feeling like getting up there and being solid at 5 and then solidating yourself at like 2 and then getting to scratch? You know, what was the kind of peaks and troughs of all that?
I've been really lucky that every handicap I've played, I've been given, I've always been able to play under it.
Brilliant.
So that's really helped me not getting to a handicap and thinking,
that's an error.
I can't play to this. Mm-hmm. So I think one at Hollingwell was fair to me, because I'm not
great golf course. Great golf course.
Like when I'm playing off the whites and and my game's not really on, I can shoot 3 over, 4 over. So I'm not too far off it, but it's a fair handicap. So scratch, I mean, now we're talking, I've got no excuses. If my game's off, I'm nowhere near. So this is the first time where there's a bit more pressure because you've got no shots to play with. Whereas one, I think, was fair. I could one was a fair handicap. If I was playing somebody like a friendly game, one was a fair handicap. Now there's a little bit more pressure when you get to scratch. You've got no margin for error.
Brilliant.
But now we're in a business end and it gets a little bit harder. Yeah.
And it's a short game, mate. I promise you now it's a short game. Knowing your distance, it's getting your distance control right and your short game. You 100%. Suss those two bad boys out, you are made.
Absolutely. 100%. And that's one, especially now, because lockdown has done my chipping no favours. Because that's something you feel. I've got some good feel because I'm used to hitting a ball and being creative with your spin or whatever. But around Hollinwell, especially when the lies are so tight and they vary so much. If I go on a Parkland course, I'm like, oh God, why can't it be like this all the time? Because you don't have as rougher lies, like with bare lies as well. Like around Hollinwell, yeah, it's a beautiful manicure course, but because of the type of grass it is, there's a lot of like fine, tight, rough lies. Whereas Parkland course, you can always nip it a lot easier. So lockdown, when I got back on the course, I was like, geez, it's the first thing that goes is those little deft touches when you need to nip it. Yeah, and you're so used to doing that because you've just played for the last 18 months. But then when you've not done that for a while, I need to get back on that. And I've never had a short game. I had a chipping lesson for the first time ever the other day.
Wow.
Because I didn't, things like understanding bounce and really understanding how to use it will really help me, and it gives you a bigger margin for error. And just 10 days ago I had my first ever chipping lesson because I was playing like a busted ass, and I needed to learn and give myself a little bit of room for maneuver. Chipping and putting when you get down is where it's at. And when my low rounds have, when I've putted, it makes all the difference.
Yeah,
can you do a Mickelson shot? Can you do the old big flopper?
It doesn't, like, yeah, of course I can if I've got a lovely lie, but it doesn't interest me too much. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd love to have the ability to do it when I wanted, like Phil, so good to watch. But as long as I get it near enough and I can hold a putt, I don't mind how I do it.
Right. Sensible. I think more people probably need to be a bit more sensible and pragmatic like that.
Having the ability to do it is nice. But
if you're playing Augusta, you might have to bring that shot
100%. But it's like in cricket. Like, so I say the mentally tough people in cricket are the ones that they know their strengths and weaknesses, but they know what shots they're better at. So they bin the ones that they're not so good at. It's like, yeah, I can play a flop shot. It doesn't mean I choose to play it all the time. And
exactly.
That's what for me, the best sportsmen in the world up their field pick and choose, and it's decision-making. Like Alistair Cook, for me, in cricket, Sir Alistair Cook, sorry, in cricket, was the mentally toughest cricketer in the world because he had all the shots, but he was just a lot better at three of them, and he only played three shots. And for me, that makes him mentally tough. He could do something, but he chose not to do it.
Yeah.
And he chose the right options more often than not. Yeah. In golf, you've got all the shots, but I'm just a lot worse at some, and I choose not to play them unless I really have to. And that's what it comes down to. And that's just a mindset thing. And that's helped me cross over from cricket into golf.
Yeah.
That's a great analogy. I like that.
It is a great analogy. Shots,
but it's having the discipline and the strength of mind to play the ones you're good at a lot more often and to not take on stuff if you don't really need it.
I was a proper play by the percentages guy, big cliche in cricket. Yeah, I can hit it over their heads, but there's a big gap over there. So why don't I just hit it over there? Because lower risk, high reward. Same in golf. It's big cliche talk, but why not just stick to the things that you've got more chance of pulling off?
Yeah, that was one of the things I learned. If there was a right pin near water or by a bunker, I still used to take it on. I used to aim at the tree or the water and draw it off of it and bring it back to the flag. And if it came off, I looked like a wonder kid. But 9 times out of 10, it'd stay out there and hit the crap. And then you'd be like, oh, bollocks. And then, you know, and then you end up learning, look, just aim left of that pin and hold it off a little bit. You know what I mean? Just, you know, just it's not your shot. You know, don't dice with that. But yeah, mate, good analogy. Very good. I like that.
Right, it's time for some name dropping, I think. You've mentioned you've played with Wade Ormsby, and you said you've played with a few other good golfers. And of course, a lot of the cricketers are good golfers as well. Come on, who have you played with, golfers and celebs that people at home will know?
Who have you won the most money off?
Some of the cricketers. I mean, everybody loves a bet. I was with Wade Ornsby the other day, and he gets on well with a lot of the Aussie cricketers. And I was at, and I was playing. So cricketers love love golf, and I was just saying I actually owe an Aussie cricketer some money because that's a mate of Wade Ornsby's, and I was just telling him, I was like, shit, I owe him some money because I didn't have any money when I was in Australia, some cash on me when we played. So I was playing with a guy called Aaron Finch and Glenn Maxwell. These are two of the top Australian batsmen, and Travis Head. So me and Maxwell took on Travis Head and Aaron Finch, and they were betting for big bucks. And I was like, oh, sorry, guys, you're blowing me out the water. I can't compete. So they had their own side bet. And me and Travis Head had our own little bet. So I still owe them that money. But this is how much they love it. I was commentating on Australia, New Zealand, Australia, England at the time in Hobart. We played a nice course in Hobart. And we got up at 5 a.m., went and played golf, teed up at 6:30, had our 18 holes. They went back to bed. I went back to bed. I commentated on the game. They played against England versus Australia. Glenn Maxwell, who cost me probably about 100 quid, got 100 off 50 balls. And then, like, after getting up at 5 a.m., playing 18 holes, and then scored 100 off 50 balls against England. I mean, it's incredible.
That's amazing.
That's a life as well.
And 18 holes of golf to warm up for a game of international cricket in the afternoon.
That's excellent. Excellent.
Do you play much with Brodie? Because he's got his attachment at the Belfry now as well. So you've got to get an invite down there, surely.
I actually play at the Belfry quite a lot. And I'm due there. When am I playing there? In a few weeks. I play there probably once a month, twice a month sometimes. Love that place. And it's great watching these big events that are just British Masters that's just been there. And you know the course, you know the green, you know the shots. And it's really nice when you've played at a course a lot to see how the big boys play it. Mm-hmm. Obviously off a tee or two further back. But it's great to watch how they do it. So yeah, obviously I've played with Brodie. But it's funny because as a selector, I'm not a selector anymore. They've just changed how things work. I'm now head scout, which is a very similar position. But it's funny because I'm like picking these boys.
Yeah.
So you don't all, I did used to play with them, but now I can't play with them as much. Actually, they don't want to. but no, I do. I play when we go on tour, I play with the boys a lot. There's some good golfers. That's Brodie, apparently a short game could do with some work, so maybe he can get tips. But yeah, the boys, they're all good golfers. They're all very good. They're all off about eight. Like Jimmy's off about five or six. Jimmy Anderson, yeah. Paul Collingwood's off similar. Brodie's off about nine-ish. But they can all hit the ball 300 yards. But like anybody, because they don't practice, because their number one game is cricket, they can spray it about. But on their day, they're all incredibly dangerous off nine. And will definitely take your money.
I thought Paul Collingwood was off a lot lower than that. I can remember doing bits 10, 12 years ago when you do like the best celebrity golfers or whatever, the best other sports people that are golfers. And I always thought his handicap was a bit lower than that. I think he might be sandbagging you a bit there. I don't know. Is he?
No, he's definitely not. He's definitely not. But he's like, so this is classic. He's like, he hasn't got the most technically correct swing. But he's super competitive like we all are, and he's naturally hits the ball nicely and decent putter, got a ropey putting grip, but he's like, he's
I haven't seen how John and I hold it.
he's a nice golfer. So we play, that's me and Collie play a lot because coach and selector, like when I'm on tours, we could get put together. But I played quite a bit with Ben Stokes. He hits a mile, as you'd imagine. He's just had a simulator installed. These boys, they can do what you tell them to do something, they can do it. They'll shape it both ways. But it's just a consistency factor, as always. Matt Wallace, I've played with Matt.
He is.
Yeah, and it was just before he was at the bottom of his wave on the way up. And obviously that was lovely to play with him. What a competitor.
He's competitive.
And that's what I like. I like watching golfers like that. I love Jordan Spieth because, again, it's one that doesn't matter how. I like Tyrrell Hatton, bit fiery. But what I love is how far he is. And most people, you hear the commentators saying, oh, we've got to get that in check. But then he'll land himself in a bunker, lob his club 20 yards, but then get up and down. He would have lost his head, but it doesn't actually affect him as much.
Quick release. That's all it is. It's unfortunately, they're in the public eye.
Yeah, exactly. And it's great to watch.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what it's about, isn't it? Because that's why cricket and golf, we play some horror shots. In cricket, you've played a ropey shot. If you do it a couple of times, you're generally out. Whereas in golf, you've got time to redeem yourself and make it up next shot. One put it behind you, but then you can redeem yourself. Cricket, you don't get quite as many chances.
Oh, I was going to ask you, James, who's your favourite player, man? Who's your inspiration? Because, you know, growing up for me, it was like, you know, Seve and Faldo, Lyle and Woozy and stuff like that. And then as I turned professional, got on tour, you know, Tiger was there, you know, playing alongside him in tournaments on the PGA Tour. And I was like, oh my God, how good is this dude? And it was like, he was in his prime. You know, is there someone that you look at now and you just go, crikey, man, that's who I want to be. You know, yeah. I want to play like him.
So I go through phases. Controversial, not controversial, because I love him. I think Bryson is very, very similar characters. I mean, big strapping guys and
see the protein shakes all day long. Yeah.
Exactly. Love pumping iron in the gym. Big boy, just like Bryson. I love him. One, because I think, again, cliche, good for golf. But it'd be boring if everybody was the same, wouldn't it? And it really annoys me when people knock him and all the bloke's trying to do is be better. Like, he can rub, slow play or whatever. He might thank his sponsors before talking about the question that the commentators asked. But he's also been playing a shed load of money by these guys. So he's respecting the people that have helped him along the way. And he's just trying to make himself better by getting bigger. And what I respect is that he's said he's going to do something and he's done it, and lo and behold, he's better as a result of it. You can't knock a guy that's just trying to work his absolute hardest, and lo and behold, he's getting better and he's reaping the rewards, and people are knocking him and like, leave a bloke alone that's just trying to get better. And if you don't know him, you can't slate him.
Well, he's a bit like yourself, mate. His work ethic is huge, like you said yours was. He's exactly the same. He's pushing all the envelopes, isn't he? In the right direction. He plays to his limits, all the limits that the governing bodies give up. He's like, well, I'm just going to take it to the full max and give it full beans.
100%. Like, fair play. And people say he's one dimensional. He is his putting is so good. And his short game, look at him at that US Open, how good his short game was, control over the ball. It's brilliant. And I respect that, a guy that works so hard for it. And he's his own man as well. Which it takes some balls to be.
Oh, it does, mate.
That's true. I respect that.
I seen in his bag, I had to give him an interview at the Porsche European Open. I think it was the week Richie Mack beat him down the last, and the Porsche European Open. I was giving him an interview and I had a look in his bag and I just picked up the club and it's just like, it's like gripping that. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was like, ridiculous. I mean, you know, it was bigger than a cricket bat grip. You know what he holds, and you just think, how on earth do you swing that? I mean, going from cricket, do you just try and do the same thing? You know, you've got that feeling in the bat like you used to with your gloves on. I mean, have you got a thick grip as well, or have you got just a more conventional grip?
No, I thought this is hard enough sport as it is. I don't need to try and make it any more harder for myself. I love like Jordan Spieth as well. One, because he's what a lovely, I mean, that group of guys, like Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler. I know there's a couple of others that they're tight with, but what good ambassadors for golf. Yeah. I mean, I sound like a complete geek saying that, but it is great. It's true, lovely though. Guys.
Oh, you're right.
Lovely guys that play some seriously good golf. And what I love about Jordan Spieth is it doesn't matter it's how many. And he plays a ropey shot off the tee, but then finds a way to get it back in, and then holds his chip. Like, have you ever seen a bloke that holds out more than Jordan Spieth? It's incredible.
I've never known anyone hold so many over 30 feet. I know that. They're just
putting,
crazy.
Like you say. And for him to have come back after those tough times, like as a kid, he wouldn't have had too many times that he fails. He wouldn't have experienced failure too much. So it doesn't surprise me that even when you're at the top of the game, when you first have a decent stint at failure, it does take you a little bit of time to bounce back. Yeah. And he would have learned so much from those down times, which ultimately is going to help him. And that's like, it's during my tough times, I'm a far better bloke now and more rounded bloke as a result of having a real tough time for a year or two. And you learn a lot. That's when you learn most. And I love, like, again, I say it, I love learning, whether it's about yourself or a new sport or something. And you do learn a lot about yourself as an individual when times are tough. And Jordan Spieth would have learned so much and will be a better, one more rounded person, but better golfer as a result of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. What's your next goal? Now you've achieved the scratch in golf, where do you go? What's your next ambition in the game?
I just want to get better at what I'm doing, because if I get better at what I'm doing, if I understand and get a consistent swing, yeah, I can strike the ball all right. But if I actually get a repeatable swing, I will be a far better golfer. I'm like, this thing's going all over the place at the top of my swing at times. And it's getting shorter and shorter the stiffer I get. I get really stiff, so that really impacts me, because I do no exercise. When I'm belting a golf ball, I get really stiff. And I'm driving all the time. Like last week, I did 700 miles in 2 days driving. Like, you're sat on your ass all the time, and then you go out and play some golf and try and do some exercise. I get really stiff. But of course, I want to get to plus whatever. But I also like things like club champs. It's hard with my work because I can't dedicate a whole day to play 36 holes on a Saturday. But things like that, like county stuff. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily county golf, because I'm not saying I'll be good enough to do that, but like comps like that, not just like handicap. I want to, now I'm at scratch, like open qualifying next year, if I become good enough, like I'm at scratch. I know people that I compete against now that are in open qualifying. Yeah. And it's not final open qualifying. This is just qualifying. I would love, because I can, if I get good enough, and I'm also realistic, I'm not arrogant enough to think I can compete with these good guys, and I want to get better so I can try and like qualify or try and get into open qualifying, something like that.
Would you ever have a dabble in the pro ranks, maybe some Euro Pro Tour events or some local PGA stuff, just to, you know, you've got good really quickly. You say that you can improve more, so maybe I could have a little go at that's
the exciting thing for me, because I know I'm not that good. I I'm a scratch golf, but there is so many areas in my game that I can get so much better at, and that's the exciting thing for me. And that's like in cricket, when I play, I was most proud and I appreciated it most when I was budget and I should not have scored any runs, but I scored lots of runs because I found a way. And that's you get more satisfaction almost because you've gritted it out and you found a way. That's where I'm at now with my golf. I could certainly be a lot better, and if you just put it together. We'll see. I'm not arrogant enough to think I can compete with the pros. Yeah. And I'm realistic. I want to get better before that even crosses my mind, because it will be a very embarrassing if you have your bad day with these good guys. So yeah, I'm not arrogant enough to think I can compete with these guys that I've been playing all their life. Yeah, I'm a natural sportsman, but there's different to those guys that are natural sportsmen and been playing it all their life. So, of course, that would be brilliant in a few years. But I'm also somebody that likes to practice, and I've all my life, to be good at something, you practice. When you've got a full-time job, you can't practice as much as you want. Like, I would happily sit all day at a golf course and practice, because I love that. Like putting, I love practicing my putting. I've actually just got a little adjustable putting green outside. So it's got
nice, man.
So you can manually adapt the slope, which is brilliant. So I would happily sit on a putting green for an hour and just listen to music or go on the phone and just putt. But to be good, I couldn't be doing a full-time job and compete. Do you know what I mean? It's just, it's not realistic.
You've been there, done that. Yeah. I was going to ask you, what clubs do you play with, James?
So I'm very lucky. Ping, like when I left the game and I first started playing golf and I was very bad, I didn't want to spend lots of money on golf equipment. So luckily Ping look after me very kindly. I use the i210s. They're brilliant, and I've just got the new G425s, which because I'm understanding the game a little bit better, these are the clubs that I notice the biggest difference, just the forgiveness. Because we're not going to hit everything in the middle, like the forgiveness is phenomenal from these new G425s. Ping looked after me very kindly.
I was speaking to Radar earlier. He says how good the driver is himself. He was out there testing the other day, and he said it was just amazing.
He was out. He was with Ping just before, actually, I went.
There you go, then.
So he was fitted so before you got fitted.
Yeah, not in the same day, but like a few days before. So, yeah, it makes such a difference. And, like, things like shaft, like, I didn't have a clue, as if, like,
the little stick that
the club head goes on is going to make such a difference. And now I'm understanding. So I've had, like, 3 new sets of clubs, like, 6 new sets of shafts because my game's developed.
Yeah.
I've changed shafts all the time, and it makes such a huge difference.
What shafts have you got on your irons at the moment? You want me to ask you?
No.
Is it the Midas?
No, so I've got a Rogue... something, I don't know, I think they are Rogue.
Yeah.
They're like stiff. I like them quite heavy as well. So my
I used to have mine really heavy.
Driver's not far off 80 grams. Like it's, I think it's like 70, 75, 76 stiff.
Nice.
I think it's only stiff. Like people, when they see me, they think I'd swing real fast. Well, I do, I'd give it a good go. But it's only like, I think it's only 115. I think I'm only at 115, so not.
I mean, that's pretty, that's quick. That's
that's quick enough, mate. Yeah, don't worry.
So you're learning all the time. And shafts, who would have thought a shaft makes such a difference?
Well, yeah, that's true. What's your favourite golf course then, bud, that you've played?
Hollingwell, I'm very lucky to play at Hollingwell.
Oh, it's a beauty, mate. Track. It's a beauty.
And I just love being able to get out there after work or whatever, or before work, and you can't hear anything. You're on your own, just hitting some balls. And I've been lucky to play Royal Melbourne a few times. That's beautiful.
Oh, you and lucky boy.
You only appreciate these courses when you get better at golf, because you understand it a little bit more. I can remember the first time I played Royal Melbourne, I'd only been playing for 18 months. And I was like, what is this? Second best course in the world. I'm like, where are the mountains? Where are the waterfalls? Like the picturesque stuff. And now I played it like not longer, like a year ago. And I was like, oh, this is so good. So that's right up there. But I love, my favorite place is Monterrey in Portugal.
Oh, that's brilliant. Love Monterrey.
He loves that. He loves that, man.
I played there a couple of times. Great.
What a place, what a resort. I'm very lucky traveling the world with cricket, even just in the last few years, having taken up golf. I've played some good golf courses, but there's plenty more to play. I've never been to America. I've been to America just on a lad's trip there, not to play golf. I need to get myself to America to play some golf, because the courses over there are just a different thing.
Mate, it is amazing. It is amazing. Absolutely.
James, it's been absolutely wonderful to talk to you. I've enjoyed it so much. It's been brilliant. I've got to give a shout out.
We'll have a round, man.
I've got to give a shout out to my girlfriend Amy and her dad Ian as well, because they're big cricket fans and they go and watch Leicestershire a fair bit. So when you first came on the scene, they were there when you first, and they've always kept an eye on you. So when I was like to Amy, my girlfriend, oh yeah, I'm getting James Taylor on the podcast, it's great. She was so happy. She was like, oh, my dad's going to love it. Ian listens to all the episodes. So I've got to give a shout out to my girlfriend, Amy, and her dad, Ian, because you're going to be there, the favourite guest we've ever had on the podcast for them. So thank you for coming on and getting me in the good books.
That's brilliant. You don't see too many Leicestershire fans about cricket fans, but that's brilliant. She would have seen so many ropey haircuts from me as well. Back then, Barry Manilow look-alike as well.
Barry Manilow, I remember that, mate. You got some great hairdos, mate. Fair play to you. You had some good hair. Highlights, mate, were rocking.
Yeah, exactly.
John's just jealous.
I used to have it, mate. I had blue hair, I had red hair, you name it, I had it. Just fell out in the end.
All the hair dye, mate. Thank you so much. John, thank you to you as well. Cheers. Thank you to everyone for listening. If you've enjoyed it, you can follow us on Twitter at Filthy Lip Out. Please leave your reviews, share the podcast with everyone, and get it out there far and wide. That's all we've got time for this week, but we'll see you next time.